Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Force Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report.
Pew, 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 pew.
Pew, pew.
Blaster fire as song. That is the way every episode of the Clone Wars really could have begun. That could have been the theme song. The person making the wonderful blaster noises is Ken Napsok, and I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and we're thrilled to be here. Right, Ken?
Oh, my gosh. I'm thrilled to be here to discuss a, an arc that is pretty grim, but also enlightening, but it is pure Clone Wars.
It is pure Clone Wars, and it is definitely one that I have thought about a lot. It is definitely one that I have rewatched a couple of times, once with my wife, and my wife, I could tell, was really feeling the depth and the pain of this arc. It is a powerful one. It is what we're calling the Curse of Pong Krell. There are four episodes in this arc, making it one of the longest in the Clone Wars. So we're talking about Season 4, Episode 7, Darkness on Umbara, written by Matt Maczenowicz and directed by Stuart Lee. Season 4, Episode 8, The General, again written by Matt Maczenowicz, directed by Walter Murch, which, Ken, do you want to let people know who Walter Murch is?
Walter Murch goes back a bit. He's a Lucas buddy. I think credited as the co-writer of THX 1138, if I'm not mistaken, but we can look that up on the old internet. But known a couple things. Editor of a little film called Apocalypse Now that we know George wanted, was planning maybe even to direct and produce with Gary Kurtz after A New Hope. And then goes on to direct his only like live action directorial credit, Return to Oz. In 1985, which also explains the Oz reference, one of the clones named Oz in that episode. So, and I had never known that. I knew Walter Murch, knew a little bit of there, but did not know. And that's the joy of this rewatch.
Yeah. Edited American Graffiti too, and the, yes, all of the Godfather films. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Re-edited Touch of Evil for its re-release in the 90s. It's a really impressive list of resume. And really cool that he got involved in the Clone Wars in this episode in particular.
Yeah.
So those are the first two episodes. And then the final two episodes, season 4, episode 9, Plan of Descent. Again, written by Matt Maczenowicz, directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Season 4, episode 10, Carnage of Krell. Again, written by Matt Maczenowicz. Clean sweep. He wrote the whole arc and directed by Kyle Dunleavy. So Stuart Lee, Kyle Dunleavy, two heavy hitters, mm-hmm, in Clone Wars. And then Walter Murch, a heavy hitter of editing incredibly famous American films.
Yes.
All good stuff. All right, Ken, I'm going to get into the summary.
Let's do it.
I'm going to try to get all the way through this in one breath. I'm not going to do it. I might have to pause. It's long. I tried to keep it short and I failed. Here we go. Invasion. Desperate to control the nearby hyperspace lane, the Republic invades the world of Umbara. The native Umbarans are allied with the Separatists and stage a strong resistance. The Jedi and the clones plan to take the capital city in a multi-pronged attack. After a daring landing and initial battle on the foggy, dark, and mysterious world, Anakin is called back to Coruscant by request of the Supreme Chancellor. Anakin's troops are placed under the command of Jedi General Pong Krell, an imposing basilisk with four arms, two double-sided lightsabers, a gravelly voice, and no respect for clones. Rex is upset with the general's dismissive attitude, but feels he must obey the chain of command. Over Rex's protest, Krell insists the clones face the enemy head-on, marching towards the city on an open road. The exposed clones are attacked and suffer many, many casualties. Meanwhile, Krell receives a message from Obi-Wan Kenobi asking him to take a nearby Umbaran airbase that is resupplying the capital city. Krell agrees and once again plans a disastrous mission for the clones, demanding they march past huge Umbaran MHC tanks, mobile heavy cannons. The clones' rockets do nothing against the tanks and they are pinned down. Against Krell's orders, the clones come up with an inventive solution. Two clones, Fives and Hardcase, sneak onto the base and steal two Umbaran ships. They use them to destroy the tanks, and the clones successfully seize the base. Victory? No! That is just the end of the second episode. Despite capturing the base, the capital city is still being resupplied from a Separatist ship orbiting the planet. Fives come up with a plan to use the Umbaran ships to slip past the blockade and destroy the supply ship. Again, Krell says no. Soon, he will simply have the clones march into the city in the exact same strategy that has failed twice. Rex can't bring himself to approve directly disobeying Krell's order, but agrees to look the other way as Fives, Jesse, and Hardcase make a daring run. Inspired by the stories of young Anakin Skywalker, they pierce the shields of the ship. Hardcase gives his life to destroy the main reactor. The supply ship is destroyed. Victory? No, Krell is set on punishing Fives and Jesse for disobeying him. He skips a court-martial and orders the other clones to execute them. Fives gives an impassioned speech, reminding the clones that while they serve the greater whole that is the Republic Army, they are not droids. They are clones with free will and choice. They do not need to obey an order like this that they know is wrong. The clones fire, but miss on purpose. Krell takes the remaining troops that Umbara have stolen the armor and weapons of the 212th and are posing as clones. But as the battle begins, Rex quickly realizes it's a lie. He stops the fighting and confirms his fear when Waxer reveals Krell told the 212th, the same lie. Realizing Krell set the clones up to slaughter one another, Krell laughs and reveals it's all true. A massive battle ensues. Krell's force powers and spinning blades end the lives of many clones. Eventually, Tup has the creative idea to lure Krell close to a dangerous local beast, the Vixus. The clones then stun Krell. Locked in an Umbaran cell, Pong Krell reveals he's seen dark visions of the future. The Jedi will die. He planned to sabotage the Republic effort on Umbara to ingratiate himself with Count Dooku. Krell wants to become his apprentice and rule in the new order. The clones think Krell is too dangerous to be kept alive. Rex tries to shoot him, but struggles to bring himself to do it. Dogma, the clone who had followed Krell's terrible orders with the most blind faith, shoots and kills Krell. And everyone lived happily ever after, except for the many, many people who died or have massive tragedies coming up very soon in future episodes.
Well done. Well done. I mean, it's a movie. It's an absolute movie. It's so much. And yeah, no, that's great.
Yeah, it's a hell of a one to try to break down to just the events, because there are a lot of them, and it's got this weird kind of beautiful, not dreamlike quality, but nightmare-like quality. Well, it feels like the same thing kind of keeps happening, right? And I feel like that's a part of the power of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Driving some points home.
Yeah, so what was your overall reaction? You love it, like it, struggle with it?
Yeah, no, I love this one, and this is one of the ones, you know, you kind of look toward when we are starting this project here. You put a circle around the calendar of maybe we'll be watching Krell by then. It's just the Clone Wars is such a great series, obviously, and it goes to so many different spaces and places and fun weirdness and wackiness and mysterious weirdness. I just do enjoy that these four episodes are war, exclamation point, and all the things that go into that and all the questions that will come out of that and are wrapped around those type of events. And you and I have always talked about that built intention of Star Wars being about wars, but also maybe not to have them, but just growing up and pew, pew, pew. And we always talk about that pulls you in a little bit. That's part of the reason you want to show up to the party. And then maybe as you get older, as you start seeing some of the stories in a different light, it's these type of arcs and these type of episodes that really make you think while also just entertaining you. I had a lot of fun just watching these ones. My notes are maybe more vague than one would think. I have a lot of notes, but just like, I just sat back and watched these episodes and watched them all in one setting both times, which is truly like a little movie. So yes, absolutely love these episodes. Can't wait to get into them.
Yeah, I'm with you. I absolutely love these. It's always one of the arcs that pops in my mind, particularly if, you know, I'm talking to somebody who hasn't watched The Clone Wars. Like, there's some amazing stuff. It is so very, very dark, both in terms of the actual actions, yeah. What happens, the visuals. It's just a really thrilling arc where the sort of concept and the aesthetic match really well. It's hugely emotional, right? This is in this era I've talked about before where I was enjoying the hell out of Clone Wars when I was watching it for the first time on Netflix in 2014. But I was speed watching these episodes because I knew Maul was coming eventually.
Right.
So I'm sure I watched all of these in one sitting. And I remember this one, along with the Ahsoka being kidnapped, being very emotional to me.
Mm-hmm.
This one was so hugely emotional, right? This like really pushed buttons for me of like, that feeling of a leader you trust and how everything works when you have a leader you trust. And then when some jerk comes in and it's life or death and like in his disrespect to the clones, I remember just being like so engaged and enjoying it so much while also being furious alone on my couch. Like this is so successfully emotional, this arc for me. And I still felt that even watching it with a little bit more of an, analytical hat on. Yeah. A couple other things, big picture things I really like about this is it's such a great way as we're getting into kind of the second half of the Clone Wars show, watching the state of the war, that this is something that's checking in on the humanity of the clones, how they feel about war, and it's checking in about the downfall of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And just the general effect of sort of darkness spreading everywhere. So it's like it's a fun arc and it's an interesting arc and it's a different arc, but it's telling the main story of the Clone Wars in some ways.
Yeah, I don't want to say it. Yeah, I'll just say it. These episodes almost fulfill the promise of the Clone Wars series if you're going to sit down and watch it. Like, let's go into the Clone Wars with the clones. And I don't want that to come off as disrespectful to the wild one fun and wacky stuff we've had. And you know, the Meeber Gascons of it all coming later. I think those now, I can say safely, are just as valuable in telling the story. But this one just really gets to the core of this and maybe what we even wanted to see. But then does what you do. It checks in on what's going on. And then I think prepares us for some deeper thoughts and deeper episodes later. Some stuff in season five, the five stuff that's coming. And then a lot of stuff we got in season seven. I just, having not seen this arc since season seven, it really connects strongly to some of the big questions that season seven asks and wrestles with and wants us to think about. And so that makes these episodes all the way back in season four even more powerful.
Yeah, and even really connects to Bad Batch season one with all the ideas of, you know, a good soldier follows orders, right?
Right, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one of the other big things that I like about this arc is, you know, this is a story about, at least partially, and we'll get into this, about rebelling against orders. And that is, this is so refreshing because the story of a lower ranking person rebelling against a higher ranking person because they're wrong is very familiar, particularly, I would argue, in American storytelling, where culturally, one of the things about being American is individuality and going your own way and being a rogue is cool, right? To the point where it's almost a stereotype, right? That the stereotype of the rogue cop who throws his badge down on the sergeant's desk because he does things his own way. We tell that story so many times in so many ways, it's a stereotype. And this is that story, but absolutely thoughtful and absolutely earned. It's not just cool because we're making a cop movie. You got to make him a rogue. He's got to go his own way because that's cool, man. It's not just the surface of that idea. It's the entirety of, well, why would anybody do that?
It's the why of rebelling. Is that kind of the theme of this? Yeah, it's not McGonagall, give me your badge. It's it's a little more than that. And in the early parts of the episode, and I think that's the purpose is, you know, this wanting and feeling like you need to trust Krell because I'm supposed to, right? He's got the lightsabers. That's what I've been following. You know, this Anakin guy seems pretty good, and I trust him. And so I'm giving you my faith. I'm giving you my trust, and how that's lost, but also what do you actually do with it? The big question of orders and loyalty. Good soldiers, that goes just to all of us as peoples, as good citizens. I think it gets deep, and it gets deep fast. And the reveal of Krell at the end, number one, makes sense. I can't wait to talk about it. But also almost has nothing to do with, like, he could also just be an a-hole Jedi, and I think it would be just as valuable of a series of episodes.
Yeah, that was the other thing I wanted to say about a big picture reaction that was almost more my own emotional reaction is I always think of this as the Pong Krell arc. We're describing it as the curse of Pong Krell. So maybe we're making a mistake by perpetuating that. That twist is so amazing, right? That he's actually seen the future. And he's such an interesting design and so frightening. It's easy to think of this as the Pong Krell arc. But, you know, when I watched it, I was like, "Yeah, no, this is the clone story. I get it. They're stuck in between a rock and a hard place, and they're trying to make decisions." But when I rewatched it this time for our discussion, like, this is the clone story. This is Rex's story, and exactly as you're saying, Krell is just an instrument to tell their story.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there's a lot I love. We'll talk about that vision thing and this thing that comes up in Star Wars all the time, and it's been there from the beginning, but I think you and I have been mentioning it a lot more lately here. It's a new Force Center shirt, maybe one day. Hope versus fear. And so I'd love to analyze Krell from at one point. Maybe he was just kind of a, you know, all right, hard ass. He had certain ways of viewing leadership and whatever. Clearly, he's got some incorrect views on the clones. Discuss about that. But maybe at some point he gets wind of this vision and the fear that emerges. And this is how he deals with that fear. It is that fear of letting go, fear of the future, all these kind of things. It's an interesting thing for me to think about now versus maybe back in the day. What is this, 2011, 2012? These were airing by now.
I do not have that looked up myself, but yeah.
Well, you know, just like, yeah, ooh, he was going the dark side. Well, yeah, but why? And I love the big why, and this is so many juicy whys.
Yeah, he definitely seems like somebody who, even at the height of his connection to the light side, would still really want to win, and not winning would be something that scares him.
Yeah,
that's powerful stuff. All right, let's get into some of the details. We always like to talk about the morals of the episodes. There are four morals for four episodes. The first is, the first step towards loyalty is trust, and then the path of ignorance is guided by fear. Then the wise man leads, the strong man follows, and finally, our actions define our legacy. These are all good bits of wisdom, but did any one of them jump out at you?
Man, all of the flavors of ice cream today. The Path of Ignorance is Guided by Fear. Again, sorry banging this drum for center friends, but like, I love to analyze what fear means. Cause Krell is not who I'd say is, you know, he has probably some courage and bravery. He's a strong cat, man. He's probably not afraid of space dragons and whale tanks and anything. He's tough, crusty, but tough. And again, he's got some views I don't agree with, to be clear, but you know, and that is the definition of strength for a lot of people, because it's a certain kind of strength. But the fear isn't that. The fear is even more beyond just that he fights from the back of the line instead of the front, right? That's very clear. Puts himself in a literal tower at one point. But like, it's just, it goes to the fear of the vision and where that goes. And like you said, the fear of losing and a lot of that. So I love analyzing that one. And then our actions define our legacy. Here's Star Wars just talking about, you're going to be faced with some things and you're going to make some choices, and that defines you. It's the power, purpose, and weight of choice in Star Wars.
Yeah. And I think our actions define our legacy is powerful too, because it's even more strong than our choices, right? It's our actions. What do you actually do? Yeah. And I think for me, that is a really powerful one to see and hear right now, because it's very easy in the world that we live in to talk a lot on social media and have a lot of opinions, you know, but I find myself gravitating towards like, okay, but what is the action? Yeah. What are we going to physically do? Because that's what will be remembered, or, you know, not necessarily physically, but
yeah.
How are we going to make an actual change rather than just throw our opinion out there?
Yeah.
What does that opinion lead to? That's a good reminder. Yep. Really like the wise man leads, the strong man follows. To me, that's a great way of kind of getting to this sort of Star Wars idea, Jedi philosophy idea, philosophy of many other places, that, you know, you should be both wise and strong.
Yes.
Sometimes you need to be a leader, and sometimes you need to have the strength to say, I'm not the leader right now, I'll follow.
Yeah, in the early Clone Wars reports, we did a lot of Ken's baseball coaching corner, but also it can be applied to a lot of just a lot of areas of life. And I like what you said. It acknowledges the power and need for both,
yeah,
and how they can work together even within inside your own soul.
Yes, the student can learn from the teacher, and the teacher can learn from the student, that kind of thing. Yeah, and the Path of Ignorance is Guided by Fear. That's a great classic. And I really love everything you're saying about Pong Krell and about that difference that we've been talking about a lot lately, about the difference between like sort of fear of physical things versus emotional fear, and how, you know, Luke saying, I am not afraid, is, you know, he's thinking about, I can fight Darth Vader. And Yoda's like, yeah, no, this is about your feelings.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on here too. As you said that so well, Pong Krell can crush anything, but he's so afraid. What if I can't?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's dive into the big ideas, because I think that there are some big central ideas, but there are a lot of little ideas intertwined as well. And I'm so curious to see, in your mind, how you kind of broke down what these episodes are all about.
Good luck, sir. I'm scrolling my notes and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of thoughts.
Do you want me to start?
Tell you what, yes. Actually, I'm going to throw a curveball at you.
Please do.
Fastball. Yeah. Go where you want to go, because I'm literally scrolling through and I'm going to pluck things and throw them at the dartboard too.
Excellent. For me, I was kind of big on, I wrote down a lot of different ideas as I was watching the episodes, because I think there are these central ideas, but then within them, little sub themes. And what was really jumping out to me is this big idea that seemed to frame all of the episodes is, specifically, Rex's honor, Rex's beliefs, and how he defined his role as not only a soldier, but a leader of soldiers, right?
Yeah.
Early in that, not early, but in the first episode, he argues that his job is both to follow orders and to protect his fellow soldiers, right? So everything he does going from there is in this attempt to balance those two things.
Yeah.
Of to be both somebody who follows the orders and protects his men. And of course, he keeps putting his men in danger, violating one half of his beliefs, because he's following Krell's orders, which is supporting the other half of his beliefs.
Yeah.
And I think what's really interesting to me about this is looking at it from the prism of Rex's trying to support both of these ideas that don't need to be against one another, but Krell is making it so they are. It sort of reflects this big Star Wars philosophy of the community matters, the whole matters. We are all connected. What happens to one of us affects the others. But also we're individuals. And as individuals, we have this gift and this responsibility of choice. So Star Wars is always supporting, hey, let's remember we're all connected. We're a system. But then let's also remember that we're all unique individuals, and that means something too. And there's all these efforts in Star Wars to me to make it that so that the group and the individual are not opposed, but that sometimes you need to do something more for the group, and sometimes you need to more take responsibility for yourself. And Rex's struggle is kind of mirrors this, right?
Completely.
And one of the other things for me in this big idea of framing it under sort of Rex's choice between these two pillars is we've learned in previous episodes, like the Cut Laquane episode, that Rex really considers the whole Republic his home, right? Cut Laquane says to him, like, well, I'm making the individual choice to defend my home. And Rex goes like, well, I'm not just blindly following. I've made the choice that the Republic is my home. So anywhere I go to defend the Republic, I'm defending my home. And like, that's really cool. And that's really great. But now we're catching up with him a little bit later. And we kind of learn that Rex has truly studied the ideology of the Republic and believes in it. He like actually agrees with it. It's not just, well, soldiers have honor, right? We have these great quotes that kind of illustrate this back and forth. Rex says to Fives, you know, we have a duty to follow orders, and if we must lay down our lives for victory. And Fives says, do you believe that, or is that what you're engineered to think? And Rex says, I honor my code. That's what I believe. And you get the sense of this. That's personal. That is something that he has analyzed and picked for himself.
Yeah.
And a little later on, we get this dialogue exchange where Rex says, it is not our call. We are part of something larger. We are not independent of one another, making that connection to the larger whole, the group. Fives responds, I'm sorry, I cannot just follow orders when I know they're wrong, especially when lives are at stake. And Rex says, you will if you support the system we fight for. Fives responds, I do support it, but I am not just another number. None of us are. To me, this is a conversation between two clones who are having this central debate that so many Star Wars stories do about the balance between the group and the individual. So that was kind of my big picture thing that I really enjoyed looking at all of the other ideas through that filter.
Yeah, right there with you. Absolutely. This idea of starting from a bigger one, I got duty versus honor, orders versus what is right. And it's interesting to look at it through Rex's perspective and the changing perspective. And there was something I think he said down at the end here of we must be trusted to make the right decision, which speaks to identity within orders. Because these episodes have a lot of I wrote down orders, the good, the bad, and the evil. And there's a lot of he says that to Dogma at one point, right? These are the general's orders, and even is kind of like at one point saying the general he's a recognized war hero, and that's what the starting point. And so it's I love what you're saying about framing it, checking in with Rex at this point, and knowing where we're going to get with Rex, and how he has his beliefs, and he still I think constantly has that thought of the Republic being home. I love that. I love you bringing that into this, and how it's being really challenged, this idea again of duty versus honor. And then the big one I love is this, you know, what does it mean to be a good soldier? That comes up a lot here. We're going to hear that again in Bad Batch, as you pointed out. And I think it was even Filoni talking about these particular episodes of like, who are you protecting? And it's kind of that big Star Wars of why are you fighting? And I love Rex. Here he is for the Republic saying we must have to lay down our lives. But he also realizes as a leader, he also has to protect those lives that are with him. and that's part of his duty as well. And it all swirls up at a wonderful, deep philosophical war story.
Yeah. And I love that it just starts with dubious tactics or then tactics that seem to kind of treat the clones as chattel. Then down to almost that direct level of Pong Krell just saying, I'm your commander and you respect that system. So shoot yourself in the head right now. Like it yeah. almost gets that direct, right? It boils down to like, Krell serves is not just like this great antagonist who forces Rex to question these things. He's also ends up being this sort of symbol of the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. Of Rex is struggling because he wants to support the system. He believes in the system, which includes this chain of command for the good of everyone. But he also believes in being an individual and not doing something that's going to just blindly following orders. And the fact that Krell uses the system to undermine the system, right? That he relies on their blind loyalty of the system to betray the system, right? He setting them up for death. You know, I think that's a great moment where he just skips the court martial and they're like, well, technically he could maybe do that, but it seems like he's just executing us while also telling us we need to follow the system. And that's so powerful to me because I think it is, it speaks to things that do happen in real life, that do happen in systems, that that it is important to believe in systems if we want to all work together, but then realizing that one disingenuous leader can pollute the system, right?
Yeah. One spoke on the wheel breaks, it's a wonky wheel.
Yeah, yeah. And I just like that Krell, you know, totally reveals himself to have the utter opposite perspective, mm-hmm. that he has no honor, he has no commitment to the whole, only to himself as an individual. You know, by the end, he's saying a new power is rising. I've foreseen it. and they're trying to like label him like, you're a separatist. He's like, I serve no one's side, only my own. Like that is the total opposite of what Rex has been turning himself into knots.
Yeah.
You know, over is mm-hmm. I don't want to just be selfish. I don't want to elevate the individual above all else because the community is good too.
Yeah. 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 Well said indeed there. And just this idea of the clones individual identity, which we know is a running theme throughout the Clone Wars, and then having to run up against the views of those who regarding their thoughts on clone identity too comes up a lot. But that led me to this big question of how can you keep your identity, your own individual identity, in the overwhelming rage of war? And these big questions coming around, it's easy to I think fudge and smudge those margins when it's just you're surrounded by viciousness. And how do you hold on to yourself there? And then you got a leader like Krell just undermining you all along the way, all along the Watchtower. I feel like I should drop in a Hendrix reference for this Vietnam related story here.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
No. I think that's a really great point, and I think the episode raises that question. Has Rex and Fives like truly just question the war the most explicitly they have at the very end. But also it kind of, I feel like along the way, it does hold Rex up almost like Ahsoka is kind of one of the true blue heroes of somebody who really, really tries to find a way, right?
Mm-hmm.
To navigate this. Because I think we see a couple examples at the end where it would be totally, we'd probably be, as an audience, probably be pumping our fists and rooting for Rex.
Yeah.
If he got pissed by the end of this, right? And he is, but he doesn't allow himself to be broken by the horror that Krell has put him through. I think it's really significant that Rex warns Dogma about the Vixis, right?
Yeah.
Dogma betrayed his clone brothers and was all on board for, summary execution. Yeah. And it would have been really easy for Rex to be like, well, that's what Dogma gets, right?
Yeah.
Funny that his name is Dogma. But Rex, I think that beat is there on purpose, right? That Rex doesn't hold a grudge. He keeps his code. Dogma's one of his clones, one of his people, and he's keeping him safe. And then it's like huge thing that I really wanted to ask you about, mm-hmm. that Rex almost pulls a direct Anakin.
Yeah.
And executes Pong Krell because he's too dangerous to be kept alive, right? Uh-huh. And, you know, his hand is shaking and Krell is mocking him and Dogma's the one who ends up shooting Krell. Do you think Rex would have pulled the trigger and just lived with it? Or do you think Rex would have said, no, this isn't the right way?
I think I'm going to say, this is a great question. I think Rex would have said, all right, take him away. I don't think he would have done it. And it's a good question because I'm rooting for it at the end. Rooting for Dogma, which, yeah, by the way, if that's your nickname, if you got a friend who's like, here's my friend, Blind Rage. Not the same as Dogma, but it's like just.
Oh, you smashed up a bar? What's his name? Blind Rage? Ah, okay.
Yeah. 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 I, yeah, because to tie it to the Anakin thing, This is the needle you're threading here. This is why I love these episodes. And again, with the war raging around all of you, and I mean, there's great shots. I almost hesitate to say great, but not celebrating the violence, but just great shots of clones shooting them Barnes in the face. Rex does at one point. There's violence, and what does that do to you?
Violent.
And to come down to this moment, I think it almost could have been Rex saying, "This is just one more dead body than we need."
Yeah. I don't know. For me, I'm with you. I think Rex wanted to, but would have stopped himself because I think he's doing it out of fear. Like, mm-hmm. The argument is pretty practical of like, well, I can't remember the exact lines, but the clone's discussing like, he is dangerous. How are we going to get him safely, you know, in the hands of, you know, where he should be? We can technically execute him. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
But I think it goes back to fear, right? Like,
yeah.
Rex doesn't want to he doesn't want to break his code. And like, yeah, if he was on top of me and about to cut my head off, I would shoot him in the face without question. If he was on the rampage and about to put a lightsaber through Fives, I would shoot him without question because I have a code. Mm-hmm. But he isn't, you know, he is a prisoner and this is an execution. That's not my code, right? And that's where Anakin breaks. And Anakin's like, yeah, okay. Yeah. Right. And this is a question about will Rex break? And he doesn't. It leaves it open for interpretation because Dogma takes the choice away.
And I'm
yeah,
and
that's
I'm
what's on the table.
And I'm not rooting against Dogma in that moment either.
No, you're not. You know, no, I mean, especially the first time I watched it, I was so emotional of like that Krell was such a just bleep.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, I would have been like, is this interactive? Can I press the button to shoot him? Like it worked on me.
Yeah.
But that's the life lesson of Star Wars of like, you know, it's one thing to feel those emotions in, you know, a joking way on your couch.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you're in that actual position, you know, what do you choose?
Yeah. What do you choose? Absolutely. What do you do? And Dogma's still in custody at the end of the episode, right? If I'm mm-hmm. trying to remember the end. Yeah.
Dogma's arrested.
Dogma's arrested indeed. So, yeah. But again, and, you know, who's here in their ear? Do it. And who's going to actually pull the trigger? Yeah. And then I'm sorry, you got me thinking there because then it's like also like Krell's also just revealed. He hasn't said there's this guy Sidious who's Palpatine because he probably doesn't know that. But like
he doesn't seem to wanting to be Dooku's apprentice.
Yeah, and you know, and I think we're familiar enough with Dooku by this point in the Clone Wars. Not you know, Attack of the Clones. He's still a political idealist, but you know, he's got some information and it's like, are you giving away, you know, could you get that out of him? And it's maybe the Jedi's problem. There's a lot of those kind of questions there that I think would have gone through Rex's head, but he got there. Yeah. He almost was there.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, that's just our interpretation. It is up for grabs. I wanted to pick up on this thread that you talked about, because it's one of the other big themes to me is just like the horror of war. Like it's certainly been episodes of the Clone Wars where some of the action is a little bit more like, let's have fun with the adventure serial. And other action scenes are like, let's remind you, this is pretty awful. And yes. this whole arc is, let's remind you, this is pretty awful. Starting from this point that I hadn't, you know, really paid a lot of attention to the shift in what the Republic is doing. Early on in the Clone Wars, they are answering calls for help. They are defending medical facilities. Now they want a remote hyperspace lane, not even a mm-hmm. major one. And so they are invading this planet.
Yeah.
Against the wishes of the people who live there. This isn't like them like, hey, Geonosis, you are producing the droids.
Yeah.
You slaughtered. You brought people to arena to be publicly killed for entertainment.
Yeah.
This is, hey, Barnes, you live here. You made a choice. You sided with the Separatists, and we're here to take your planet and shoot you in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. No, even we're going to get to some of our favorite action moments. I found it more difficult to write them down. Anytime I did, I was like, I'm not here to celebrate as much as I would in the past that it's fun playground Star Wars action. Oh, he jumped on a spider droid and shot him. Yay. This, I mean, there was that one shot where the couple shots of that are like blasters, you know, the perspective of the Umbaran being shot, but there's one, I think it's Rex walks by because he got the little pistols and just shoots a guy on the ground. I'm like, what? It's just, and it's, and again, this, you know, to have Walter Murch come in for even just one of these episodes. And I made a joke, but it's like, I almost can hear the Hendrix playing in the background as napalm explodes around it. I mean, it's serious stuff here. Using the Star Wars action we love.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is in many ways not subtle, which is great. I love that the narrator describes it in one of the openings as a hostile planet completely enshrouded in darkness. Yeah. Right? They're heading into the unknown. Everything is a visual metaphor. Everything is dark. It's creeping and crawling. They don't understand the place that they are in, a place that they, you know, arguably don't have a moral right to be in, but they're following orders of the larger war. Yeah. You know, and the Umbarans are using every advantage of this, you know, natural world and their different technology that they understand. There's so much there that really kind of reinforces like the, ooh, you know, this is way different than, you know, they shoot a battle droid and he goes, oh no, you know, and to your point about just kind of the Walter Murch of it all, there's that shot, where Pon Krell is watching the battle and you just see the fire reflected in his eyes. That is such a just like I like violence shot, you know.
It's an I love the smell of napalm in the morning moment. I thought, you know, I know that's, he didn't write or direct that one, but I just and it's fun because Star Wars is because of Lucas's influences gets, you know, attached to a lot of other film genres and specific films and stories. I think the World War II one comes up a lot correctly from the sense of, you know, Lucas put those, the World War II dogfighting footage into, you know, animatics to here's how the Death Star trench run or the escape from the Death Star should go in New Hope. But let's not forget, he was mostly commenting on, I think Vietnam all through a lot of Star Wars. So it all kind of, this really tracks, and this is a creator who wanted Apocalypse Now, was planning to do that story and take that film. He and Kurtz. Oddly enough, this is why I think these four episodes really, really just go, yeah, that Clone Wars thing you wanted to see, yeah, we're gonna give it to you, and it's not gonna be as lighthearted as you'd think.
Yeah, this is one of those episodes that's like, yeah, remember that it's not just that Sidious tricks the Jedi Order 66; it's that like, they are slipping into, as a government, as, you know, an army, doing things that are like, do we really want to be doing this? This is Dark Endor. You know, Endor is the story of the cute bears who, you know, understand their environment better than the invading army. And you're watching this and you're rooting for Rex because he's a good guy and the clones and they're our heroes. This is called the Clone Wars. And then you're like, wait, this is Dark Endor. The Umbarans are the Ewoks.
I love that George is sitting around in that wood paneling office up there. I know it's not wood paneling, but it's always dark and wood in those Clone Wars conference rooms meetings that we see clips of. And he's like, all right, so no one got my point of Endor because I made the bears too cute. Can we do it again?
And from a different perspective where the heroes are the invading army. Yeah. I got some other thoughts on kind of big picture stuff that it ties to. Do you have other thematic ideas?
I mean, a lot of it. It's funny. It's four episodes, and there's a lot to process. It all just kind of does flow nicely into some of these big things we've been talking about: identity and duty and honor, hope versus fear, the big Star Wars thing, leading from the front, and all those kind of things we're talking about. But yeah, then it really starts to spin into Star Wars's bigger picture. So I'm happy to jump into that with you there.
Awesome. So one of the things that we talk about a lot on Force Center is a kind of big overall theme of Star Wars is this sort of the rigid versus the organic. And I think that expresses itself in lots of different ways. But this episode or this arc, I thought was just it was everywhere. Right. Because it's discussing, you know, societies, communities, but armies in particular that, of course, order is needed for armies to function. You know, if you have 100 soldiers.
Yeah.
And you need 100 to take that hill. You can't have 27 of them going, I'd rather take a break. You're like, right. Order is needed. Right.
Yeah.
So you've got that rigidity. Right. Mm-hmm. But then it gets brought up again and again in different ways. Like there's that joke early on where Anakin kind of teases Rex about how one clone is kind of wound tight, kind of like Rex. And then Rex says like, I used to be wound tight like Dogma. And you get that suggestion that Rex has grown and become more organic and flexible. We see Anakin and Rex just seamlessly together adapt to the situation, being really flowing and organic within the rigidity, right? And then once you get Krell there, you know, everything is rigid and nothing is creative. Mm-hmm. And all of the victories that the clones end up having when they disobey Krell are because they're being organic, they're being creative, right? They're coming up with creative solutions, even using a bendy tree,
yeah,
you know, to get to the victory point of the airbase. You know, Five's speech is even like this triumph of the flowing in the organic in order to avoid his own execution, right? Yeah. Is reminding them that we are individuals and we have choices. Top, who has been kind of on the fence, he's the one who comes up with a creative, organic plan to stop Krell by trapping him with the Vixis. And then for me, on top of all of this, the Umbarans, everything that they have is much more connected to the Earth, right?
Yeah.
All of their tech is more organic, right? That it's called the impending assault tank or Umbaran crawler tank. It's a caterpillar, you know? It's just it's burrowing literally in the earth. Their ships are intuitive, right? Their ships feel more like, you know, giving a good massage than flying a ship, right? Like everything about it is, you know, far less rigid and far more organic and intuitive and connected to the earth. So I just thought this rigid versus organic was there everywhere.
I love it because I saw a lot of it too. And just some of the simple stuff with Krell, of how he doesn't even think soldiers can adapt to becoming pilots. He leaves no room for growth. And this idea that leaders need to give people enough room to grow and be themselves, which might include some mistakes, risks, or questions, while also maintaining the order. So I think that kind of falls in that same bucket of the organic versus flowing, rigid versus organic, all those wonderful Star Wars themes.
Yeah, yeah. That Rex's line is, "My men may not be pilots, sir, but they're able to learn and adapt quickly. A few of them have already demonstrated that."
Yeah.
And Krell's just like, nope. Yeah. So what were some big ideas for you that reflected larger Star Wars storytelling and perspective?
Yeah, just, yeah, we're telling these, you know, these big stories, the Star Wars. And so this has a lot of the effects of war on everyone. There's a thing at the end with Krell when he's kind of justifying his horrendous actions. And he's like, this is the price of such victory. And that's this thing, this shield you can almost put up to, you know, keep you safe from critiques of these dangerous actions. And goes back to this big question of, well, who you're protecting. You're protecting maybe a republic, but you're also, as a leader, got to protect those who are fighting with you and for you and working with you there. So just seeing the effects, long-term effects, because I'm curious, we don't have much more Krell storytelling. He's referenced a few times, referenced in Dark Disciple, I believe. But we don't have a lot to analyze of who he was. Again, I get he probably was always a little grumpy. Probably I get it. And I respect that. Me and David Harbour respect that. But you know what, this is the effect on him on what this carnage has done and this fear of losing power. Krell has that. It's the Dooku, Christopher Lee describing Dooku as he's amoral. He's concerned about his own power, almost to the point of fighting for the side that will help him win in a way. Not that I think Dooku would have gone back to the Jedi, but just like Krell echoes that. It's like, mm-hmm. Jedi, I've moved beyond that silliness. Ugh, I'm for myself and for power and doesn't want to lose it. And that, to me, he lost his soul at some point out of the fear of losing power. And that's an unintended consequence of the war. We often think of it's just on the battlefield in Star Wars. I think especially when it gets a chance to, when these more TV shows or later, you know, books or something where you can spend a little more time versus a 2.5 hour block of box office, you know, big tent filmmaking there. I do love when they go in on this and ask you, what is the price of such victory? We got a lot of different answers here in these episodes.
I love everything you're saying here. I think that's one of the reasons that this always pops in my mind is the Pon Krell arc, because that turn right at the end is so it's so powerful to me as somebody who's always wants more Jedi stories of individuality. It's what the High Republic is doing so well. The Clone Wars does do it sometimes, particularly with somebody like Quinlan Vos. Is like, he's way out there, but he's a good Jedi, but he's his own dude.
Yeah, man. It's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah, but with Pon Krell, right? Like, we know the various Jedi who fell to the Sith and all that, but this is really like when Yoda says the shroud of the dark side has fallen, you know?
It's yes.
Like, there are many, many impacts of that. And this is a little bit headcanon for me, because we don't know a lot about Pongkrel, but the way I always kind of interpreted, just as, you know, I've had a vision, was like, yeah, this is maybe a Jedi who had some issues with order and control and was, you know, not great with that stuff, but you can slide by with that in the order. And a vision of the truth of the horror broke him.
Yes.
You know, and that vision wouldn't have come if this future wasn't coming, if the Jedi hadn't played into Sidious's hands.
I love Shroud of the Dark Side. That's a good example. We've been talking about the dark side. The dark versus the light goes down to these micro levels of choices. And will you lie on that paperwork? If so, Palpatine's interested in your employment. A lot of things like that. And yeah, fast. I'd love to get. Can we get a Krell one shot comic of young Krell's fights today or something?
I would love some more Krell content.
Again, going back to that quote of just like, no, trust him. Number one, he's a Jedi. Two, he's a war hero. He's a war hero. Yeah. And Yoda would say, yeah, I don't know. Wars don't make one great. It might be a little more than that.
Yeah, I know. And when they're looking up, like, have you seen his casualty numbers? Like, it doesn't matter. He's a war hero.
Yeah, no, it's a great point of, yeah, you're right. How has he got there?
I love that. Then there's a little connection to Sifo Dyas as well, who's had some a little broken by visions, which we'll get to some Sifo Dyas content here soon. You touched on this, but I also just wanted to bring it up because it's such a big thing in Star Wars in general, but the Clone Wars is the humanity of the clones, for sure. The fact that he insists by calling them by their numbers, and that line from Krell of CT7567, do you have a malfunction in your design, you know? And that moment where Rex first gets mad and says, a plan that cost us men, then whips his helmet off so we see his face, not clones, men. It's so powerful, and it pops up throughout this episode that it seems like maybe Krell, even before he entirely broke, just didn't respect them. They were expendable experiments from a test tube, not beings, not sentient beings, you know?
Well, yeah, and we've tracked that a little bit with some of the Jedi along the way, and it's one of the differences between Anakin and, I would argue, Ahsoka as well than some of the others. But towards the end there, I noticed it more on the second view, and he instead of saying, like, died, killed, he says, like, decommissioned or destroyed, as if they're, like, you know, take them out back, the photocopier that's not working, and destroy it. It's just this machine, it's this thing, it has no use to us anymore, and that popped out to me a lot more in the second viewing of just like, yeah, he can't even admit that they're dead, they're destroyed, decommissioned tools.
Yeah, they're like the AT-AT, you know, how many tanks did you lose, how many clones? Yeah, same. Other thoughts for you?
Well, out of that, the final one I had is a theme, and also would ask this big question of just what will be the clones' identity after the war. They start asking that more than I can remember in the past here on the Clone Wars, and leading up to season 5, leading up to 6, and then of course season 7. And you're right, Bad Batch, which deals with that a lot. I just thought this was they kind of even end the episode in that kind of tone of like, well, we got through this. What's going to happen to us after all this? We are tools for this war. We're fighting to find ourselves within that, but has anyone ever thought about that? And I thought it's a great big question to push the story forward.
Yeah. I don't think I have given proper weight in my thinking about these episodes to that end beat, right? That it's got that great, like, okay, the war's going to end, and then what happens to us? But even that beat before that, right, where Rex seems like he is truly questioning not the individual commands, but the war, right? Like, it feels like there's this nice grace note where the episode, you know, it doesn't overly point it out, but it's there if you look for it. This is an invasion, and really seems like Rex has come to actually question not just this individual mission, because it is dubious, or all of the losses because of Krell, but the war itself, with questioning, why are we fighting this whole war, which leads to Five's great thought about that war will end. So what will happen to us then?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, after graduation, are we all still going to be friends? Yeah.
Yeah.
Giant ramifications going forward.
Yeah. And I just like seeing that growth from Rex to like question orders, question missions, question the whole war of like, is this all worth it? What did we accomplish this time really in the grand scheme of things?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Last thing for me is just to point out kind of a big thing that always happens in Star Wars. There is often this real questioning of organizations. You know, the prequels are really about the failures of systems from the government to the Jedi. And Lucas has fought many well-documented real-life battles against studios, directors' guilds, the ton of various government boards and councils blocked his narrative art museum. This is a real Lucas theme of saying, hey, question organizations because they're built by individuals and they can rot.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got some thoughts on
it. He does. He does.
And I mean that in a serious way. Yeah. And this is, I really think this is, I was talking recently with some other folks about, you know, Star Wars TV versus Star Wars movies and how, look, I'm always going to want to see Star Wars in a movie theater. And I think that's kind of where a lot of my emotions go to as a Star Wars fan. But man, TV, it's already proven it can work because George and the team that he commissioned really showed us you can take the time to ask these big questions on a weekly seasonal basis.
Yes, that is for kids of all ages.
Yes.
yes. With even when the episodes are scary like this one. All right. We are going to take a break and then we're going to get into some of those scary moments. Tons of action. Still some comedy and whimsy and some great connections to larger Star Wars lore and canon. We'll be back in just a moment to discuss all of that.
Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So let's discuss some of our favorite action moments in this great, exciting arc of the Clone Wars. Ken, did you have some favorite action moments, dark, dark action moments?
Yes, I did. I mean, yeah, but again, I'm not just saying it. There's a couple times it's like, that was cool. Oh, wait, yeah, I get there's some more serious stuff going on beyond these episodes. So I'll start here. The opening approach. Is that's this Vietnam connection. The lats, for the first time, I think that I can remember when I first watched this, they remind me of Huey's, the helicopters in Vietnam, just the newsreel footage we've all, you know, grown up or heard stories for if you had family members that served there. And it just had that vibe, which one hand is like, oh, cool, military action, pew, pew, pew. And other times it was quite a statement to start. It was like, here's what we're doing. Are you ready? Because this is what we're going.
Yeah, no, I was right there with you. It's aesthetically gorgeous. Just the shots of the Republic gunships, the lats descending into the darkness and needing to have their headlights on, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, once they land, man, it's great to have earphones in and the captions on. Mm-hmm. It really drives home that the clones didn't choose this battle, but they're in it, right? And they got to be in it. And they're shouting things like, wipe them out. That's the stuff. And like,
yeah,
those aren't battle droids.
Yeah.
Those are the people who live on this planet. it's a great action moment because it's thrilling, but it tells this great story at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And right after that, after they land, what you're starting to talk about there is what I called the charge of the AT-RTs. Just, you don't really see them get their due in Star Wars. They're there. They're always there in the battles, but this is just like, yeah, this is a tool we'd like to use. And it was kind of, like you said, aesthetically pleasing as well.
Yeah. And the sounds on those AT-RTs as they're hopping around, little weird bunnies of death.
Bunnies of death.
So right there with you with that. What's another one for you?
Look, as a fan of the Y-Wings, I will point out they have a quite impressive napalm-like bombing run.
Yes, again, they do.
All along the Watchtower started playing, but hey, I love my Y-Wings. Got to shout it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I really love that moment where they first encounter the Vixis. I love Fives throwing a thermal detonator to the Blixis's other tentacle, or Vixis, yeah. So it brings it into its own mouth. Clever, Fives, clever.
I love that. Yeah. I love a good open maw trying to eat you in Star Wars.
Exactly. But it was great because, like, yeah, you could have just tried to chuck it into the maw, but that idea of like, feed here, I'll feed you.
Yeah.
Bring it into your own maw.
Yeah. Look, these Vixis, they're just trying to, they're just living their lives, man. Come on, man.
But, yeah. I mean, they're just sitting there waiting for somebody to walk by. They're just doing their thing.
Yeah. Just doing their thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also really love the design of those impending assault tanks or Umbaran crawler tank. Man, when they first burst out, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot they got attacked by the beast. Like, no, wait, those aren't beasts. Those are tanks with the rotating blasters on the top. In just the burrowing, the exploding up out of the earth. And then in particular, the scuttling along. There's a couple of shots where they're they're just coming at them and, you know, and they're trying to blast them and it's not making any difference. And it's, it is just, it's so terrifying to have an enormous creepy crawly bug racing at our heroes.
Yeah. I the entire caterpillar tank sequence, man, I wrote down, is just like, you got to do a tip of the cap. Cause I too had, for this particular episode, I had my headphones on, trying not to annoy Grace, with too much Star Wars in the house. But just the pounding, the sound design, the pounding of the feet, it was a very effective thing. And it ends with that Rex riding the waves of an explosion. It was a pretty impressive action sequence.
Yeah, absolutely great stuff. I also really love, it's a action, but also some comedy. When Fives and Hardcase initially steal the Umbaran ships and are trying to take off in just
the
spinning.
Like that.
Yeah, the laughter is really great. There's another great moment of clone individuality when Hardcase is just saying, that's how I am.
Yeah.
It was so cathartic for me because I want to play the game. I want to finish it sometime. But watching Fives and Hardcase try to fly those ships, that's me playing Squadrons.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah.
I'm just not, I don't come to it naturally, and I'm only going to get good at it with, you know, hours of training.
Yep.
But yeah, that weird contrast between like, great, we are in these ships. Let's zip forward. Like, oh, we can't even fly straight. Am I upside down? Like, that's so great.
The amount of times during Squadrons, I yelled to my TV, why is the Star Destroyer upside down?
Where am I? Yeah. What are some other moments for you?
I put down, is particularly the first episode, but I'm sure it was present in the rest of it. It didn't jump out as much. There was some of the action sequences. I mean, because, you know, they're overwhelming. It's the Chaos War. There's this general, like subtle shaking of the camera during a lot of the action. It's see, it's just like, it's kind of there and it's kind of adding to the sense of what is going on and the overwhelming nature of it all. And I just like that kind of a choice.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that. One of my other favorite action moments from the later episodes is, it's kind of an action moment, but it's also a de-accelerating from action. Rex running through all that blaster fire yelling, we're all clones. We're all clones. And you almost get that sense that I kind of thought it was an action line because you got that tension of is he going to be able to stop this? But also like he is willing to just throw himself into blaster fire because what is happening is so wrong. Right.
Totally.
So you have that great tension of is Rex going to get, shot down, caught in this blaster fire. But just that, the power of whipping off the helmet and screaming, we're all clones. It's like the moment where like everything for Rex, I think, kind of snaps into place.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Waxer there. I love that. Yeah. The whole spider cannon sequence, which includes the commandeering the ships, the Umbaran technology, which includes those ships, the wings move kind of almost organically when the ship lands and everything about it. It's really underrated for Star Wars in terms of Star Wars designs. I'd love to get a little bit more. I mean, the biggest Umbaran we know is Sly Moore. We haven't spent a lot of time with the Umbarans and maybe have a bad reputation because of Sly. But I really loved a lot of the designs and then how it played in the action sequences.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's just something about it, too, of like, you know, it, flying those ships is not, you know, smashing a button.
Right.
It's like it's dancing. You know, I love that.
It's water dancing. Yeah.
I, of course, want to talk about the brutal, extended march of death that Pongkrell inflicts on the clones. But anything else before we get to that?
No. There's a little moment in terms of just little action when Jesse and Hardcase and Fives are flying up, and they enter the battle, and the clouds kind of part, and there's this whole space battle going on. It just was, it was beautiful in its own horrific way, and I just kind of liked that.
It was, yeah. And they're like, oh wow, yeah, yeah. There's actually that one moment there where I think the ships all turn in unison, and it's so floaty and graceful. Yeah, there's a ton of great moves in that sequence.
Beautiful in its own way. Yep.
Yeah. All right, shall we go to hell with Pongkrell?
Yeah, I wrote down brutal and brave, so that's a title for our essay on the carnage of Krell.
Yeah, that is one of the greatest moments for me of Star Wars tension, of like, as action scene, it is cool. It is, you know, especially when I first saw this and we hadn't had as many different sort of looks in on Order 66, which we have now more in comics and on screen and in video games. To see, like, oh, wow, what happens when a Jedi is ready for the clones?
Yes.
Ready and willing to kill them. So there's this part of it that's like, cool. And he's got two double-bladed lightsabers. A Dexter Jester guy is killing clones with two double-bladed lightsabers. It's like, it is cool, but it's also so brutal because he is so in the wrong and the clones are so in the right. But it's still thrilling.
100% is. And a lot of... some of the force powers Krell has and everything. And I love that you bring it up. Like, you know, poor Ki-Adi Mundi turns around and is oopsie. And, you know, Aayla Secura is not even paying attention. And, you know, it's part of the tragedy there and what could happen. And, but also just Krell being fueled by his fear and his rage and his darkness. It was in some of the shots too, reminded me that it's one of my favorite things about the Vader hallway sequence I've talked about before is like, yeah, everything that you see, but there's also that one shot kind of after the main sequence where Vader's in the hallway and it's more light. And it's almost more realistic that this monster just slashing people in half. And there are some longer shots, almost if it was in the background where the clones are contemplating what to do, where you just see Krell maybe through the binoculars, just like chopping people down and just kind of with the glee in his eye. And it was kind of even more scary for me than the up close stuff.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. A couple of specific beats, that big force push in the office, you know, that's, you know, sometimes when the Jedi are surrounded, I'm like, why don't they just do a big force push in all directions? So it's nice. It was nice. It's a cool action beat to see. And then I think for me, maybe the most brutal part is there's the double stab behind the back. Mm. And then he just drops his lightsabers for no reason other than it feels like he just wants to more viscerally feel the violence, which is so horrible and leads to that, you know, bringing up his knee and smashing the clone down on it, which is perhaps the most vicious thing.
Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah. Everything about it. And there's that part of the sequence where I call it the horror Krell voice sequence, where it is just like a horror movie.
Yeah.
Red tone and his voice is projected through it all. It's frightening.
And laughing and glee, and then of course for me the part that makes me feel a little better, Tup's great move with the Vixis, and everything with that is so great.
Yeah, I like Tup.
Yeah, and just the simplicity of, you know, boop with the stun blast after all of that.
It's all it took. All it took. Yeah. Just many dead. And my final one for me though, we talked about the philosophical debate you could have at the moment if you're a clone, but you know, dogma firing the shot. There you go. That's some action that ends the hell.
It is a great moment to have that contrast between this sort of like operatic heightened nature of, you know, discussions of morality and power of the force, and I am unstoppable and you are too. And then it's so just pedestrian, right? It's just so like, oh, there's a tiny little sizzle hole.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those moments where Star Wars benefits from being really heightened and then having a moment of, you know, kind of realistic violence, like not obviously it's a blaster to a big alien dude. But that same way, like, you know, when you have the unfortunate situation to like see somebody get punched in real life, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a big moment. It's this sad, gross whap, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's flat and period. That's it. And the way that blaster shot is just so sort of like anticlimactic,
yeah,
is really powerful.
Good punch is like a side of bacon, drop it on your kitchen floor, just subtle smacking. Yeah
And unpleasant, much like dropping bacon.
Much like dropping bacon.
Any other action moments before we move on?
No, let's get on to the just comedy that just poured out of these episodes.
Just dripping with whimsy, right? What were some moments of comedy or whimsy that you enjoyed?
Yeah, I did like Hard Case at the beginning near the Vixen sequence, just going, that's not right. That's because it's not right. Disgusting.
Yeah. I liked the little bit of banter right at the top between Anakin and Obi-Wan of does my battalion have to do everything? And Obi-Wan saying, you seem to always volunteer.
Yeah, love that. Love that.
Yep. And then this moment with Krell, I can't believe I'm giving a moment of whimsy to Krell, but it did make me laugh. It was whimsical within being a giant jerk. Is when those animals attack and the clones understandably shoot at them, and then he just jumps up and slaughters them. And then he says, anyone else want to stop and play with the animals?
I'm with you. I wrote that down too because I was like, all right, you know, look, when you're funny, you're funny. All right, fine.
Yeah, I'm not paying for a ticket to Krell's comedy show, but that was funny. Fair enough.
Krell's got he's got a good 10 minutes. I like that. And then, later on, kind of fives to Rex after Krell's kind of like, all right, I've acknowledged some of what you've done is good. And he's like, I think he almost complimented you. I like that
too. That's really great. There's a Hard Case line, which is brutal, but it made me laugh, is when he's firing away with the big blaster. He says, make them eat heat.
Yes.
That is a good one. And I like the, don't feel like we hear very often in Clone Wars, sort of Star Wars galaxy possible swears. So I liked it when the one clone, I didn't track which one, said, Scrag, at seeing the Umbaran tanks.
I'd like to see Scrag have a comeback. Dank Ferrick is great. We hear that a lot now. And I love a good Dank Ferrick reference, but Scrag. I want Scrag.
We got Dank Ferrick. We got Carabast. Let's throw some Scrag in there.
Yeah. Holy Scrag.
Yeah. More for you?
I think the main event, you mentioned Hardcase and Fives. Anytime they're learning to fly, that's twice in the story. They're trying to learn to fly. It was really fun. I actually enjoyed that. Hardcase is kind of rest in peace, Hardcase. He had some fun lines all the way through it. But you and I got to talk about the battle droid humor.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
The break time is over. Back to work, which is funny enough. But then the two clones are like tired and exhausted, as if they experience physical pain.
You mean the two battle droids?
The two battle droids. I sounded like Krell for a second. I just thought that was just a funny moment. The one battle droid there with his head hung over, like, oh, long day at the office.
Yeah, the perspective of the battle droids, that they're like, much like the clones, are just like, we didn't choose this. We're literally programmed this way. It's very funny, and especially shocking after you've been spending time with the Umbarans, where it's a very different adversary than the battle droids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was absolutely great. I did like the specific conversation between Hardcase and Fives when they were on their way to try to sneakily infiltrate the base. And Hardcase says, my commander on Kamino said my growth acceleration chamber had a leak.
That's true.
It's just a great moment of individuality, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, kind of almost being proud of it. Like, I'm different.
I mean, it's just like, you know, we aren't all the same. Yeah. We literally had different life experiences. And, you know, I am who I am. I'm trying.
I am who I am.
Yeah. Last one for me is I liked it when Jesse said when they were flying up to take out the supply ship, you know, I'm only doing this because I don't like him.
That's great.
Yep, take that, Pong Krell.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Made your space bed, now you can lie in it. Any other moments for you?
No. We'll get to some lighter episodes soon, I'm sure.
Yes, very, very soon. We'll move on to some Star Wars canon, lore, connections to other stories. We had some species, some aliens, heavily featured in this arc. The Umbarans, of course. Mm-hmm. We have seen them before. Mi Dichi is featured in the Clone Wars. He's the senator from Umbara. And then, of course, we have Sly Moore, the famous aide to Palpatine. In Jedi Fallen Order, there is the gang leader of the Haxian Brood, whose name is Sork Tormo. So definitely have seen some Umbarans. Do you want to see more, Ken?
I do. I get why they were not the focal point of this episode in terms of we're not going to their camp and getting their thoughts on the war and the clones. I understand that. And it was it kind of sets you up for, oh, we're here on the Republic side, and that's where we're approaching these episodes. And then we dive into the meanings behind it all. So I didn't need it here, but I would like to. I'm fascinated. It's such great design. The roadway that has its like fluorescent lights that you got the crabs that are kind of like, are the crab flying crabs half mechanical, or is that just kind of the way the planet is? There's a lot of questions about it, and I love the design, and it's very much more sci-fi and Earth alien style in a way. Not saying they are, but like the designs, it's Close Encounters of the Third Kind kind of vibe, and I really like that. So yeah, I'm happy to revisit that planet. Let's go back there.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to see it in some live action things, because there's something so cool about it. Is even if their technology isn't entirely like based or powered by the planet, there's just this sort of philosophy of, do you build architecture that resembles your planet, or do you fight it, right? And they're just so in line with it. Like, you see those plants that are like, they're mostly dark and twisty, but then they have this kind of neon pop at the tip, and then the road is exactly the same way. It's mostly dark, but then it has these glowing lines,
Yeah. Yeah, great road design. Yeah, it just really underrated, and a shout out to the design teams and the concept artists and everything a lot of work goes in each episode. This we know, but I thought just want to highlight how great it was. Very imaginative.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful, and really helped to make these episodes, I think, what they are. Then, of course, we have the Basilisk. So, of course, very famously, Dexter Jetster. The species has made many other appearances in books and comics, but Dexter's the big one. Do you think Pongrel ever went to Dex's diner?
I absolutely think he did. I think Kenobi tried to bring him there, and I don't think Krell got along with Dex. And I think it because no. Krell was probably intimidated, who's this guy? I'm the only best look around here. Like, I think there were some problems.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you feel now? And honestly, when you first saw it, how did you feel about, Dexter back in the day, particularly for people who grew up with the original trilogy and were kind of salty about the prequels?
Right.
Maybe not one of the favorite features of Attack of the Clones back in the day. Did you feel that way? Were you shocked to be like, the most terrifying Jedi I've ever seen is a Dexter Jetster?
No, I can't remember my exact memories other than I think I liked it. And I think around this time, the Clone Wars is getting me to reevaluate the prequels, and I'm still doing it privately, secretly in the comfort of my own home, so no one will see my shame, right? I can't admit I might like the prequels back in 2011. And I think I took it very well. I think it was like a... I think if I'm being honest, I probably took it more of like, oh, see, they made it cooler. I've always been a fan of Dexter, and I stand by that. I always have kind of liked the sequence more than other folks did, even back in the day. But you know what I mean? I'm taking it like, oh, he's not a cook, he's a Jedi. Like, I think I probably looked at it like that, and I thought it was a good use of this character.
Yeah, I thought it was just one of those great moments of, the just having such great variety, right? Of Dexter Jester is this very specific character who's been poked fun at for, like, he's got four arms and he uses one to pull up his pants, and just the kind of next major on-screen appearance of that, that kind of character being entirely different character is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moving on then to the Vixis, according to Star Wars Visual Dictionary, the Vixis shared a common ancestor with the Rathtar, Blixus, and Sarlacc, all possessing a large maw, tentacles, and a voracious appetite. Each found on different worlds, the different species had adapted differently to become a great hunter in its specific environment. How do you feel about that?
I kind of feel terrified. Again, these are just creatures just living their lives, doing their things. I'm someone who chases a spider out of the house and relocates it and doesn't kill it, so I try to respect these creatures doing the thing here, but it's also terrified. The Sarlacc, the Rancor scared me in the moment, but I had nightmares of the Sarlacc. 3PO did not do me any favors, not do the Sarlacc any favors by telling me I'd rot in there. So anytime I see any Sarlacc-like creature, maybe it ties into I don't love the Rathtar sequence we've talked about for years, right? Maybe there's some deep-seated connection there, and the Vixis now are just in that bucket of things I'm afraid of.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty rational to be afraid of something that has huge tentacles that wants to pull you into its horrible gaping maw. It's naturally a little bit scary. Yeah. What I love about, you know, the Star Wars Visual Dictionary kind of trying to connect these various beasts that have this similarity is like, okay, well, I guess, you know, the Vixus, we kind of see how that works. You come too close and it's going to have a meal. Blixus, similar. Sarlacc apparently gets fed plenty by Jabba. Mm-hmm. What happened in the evolution where the Rathtar was like, I guess we're going to have to roll around to find our food?
Clearly, they're like, look, we've just been hanging out in sand dunes. Even adding ourselves a tongue mouth did not help us. We need a roll. We need some rolling balls of maw.
How would you have felt if The Force Awakens comes out and Han Solo is like, yeah, I'm hauling some rolling sarlaccs?
It would not have been good.
Nope. Agree with you there. Okay. Couple other things to talk about. This was such a tribute to the clones. Obviously, it was their story framed through Rex, but we got to know lots of the other clones. And a lot of them we already know or will know more. So I just wanted to run down them quickly.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have Rex, one of the main characters of the Clone Wars. We have Fives. He is one of the central clones of the animated series, right? We've followed him from training on Kamino to becoming an ARC trooper to his upcoming tragedy. In a little bit here. Tup also has great upcoming significance in an upcoming arc. Hardcase, we had met him on Sleukamai in the same arc where we met Cut the Quain. Mm-hmm. Dogma only exists for this arc, but great name, great purpose.
Yeah.
Jesse, we also met on Sleukamai. But man, for me, this was really powerful to rewatch this episode and go like, oh, he's going to hunt Ahsoka and Rex during Order 66.
Right. Absolutely is. Yeah. 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 Is there more? Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I was curious about your thought on that, if that affected you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all of it. The one I also love, Jesse, just is like, here's a light bulb. Here's Shooter. I'm Phil. It's always been fun. No, I do love the connections, and it's been fun to revisit the Clone Wars now, a lot more storytelling behind us all, but also just being able to track clones. I didn't track that as much back in the day. I'm making myself sound like Krell. They all were just the same to me. No. I know Rex, you know your Cody's, but I love seeing where they pop up. And I love going back to Fives, where they kind of reintroduce him up top as if he was the actor that left the show to go do a sitcom, and then the sitcom gets canceled. So he goes back to the show that he was on. I love that too.
Fives is back. Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. Then Kix, the medic. I've been having fun following Kix. He pops up in some Clone Wars arcs, and he actually pops up in this short story that things keep coming from when I research them. I got to read this eventually. It was in the General Force Awakens era. It's a Sadan Athano story called Crimson Corsair and the Lost Treasure of Count Dooku, and Kix actually pops up in that.
Wow.
One of the people reporting who we don't spend a lot of time with, but I think he's reporting on how an aerial battle is going, is Appo. And that is the jerk who tells Bail Organa to leave in Revenge of the Sith.
It is. He marches into that temple with Anakin, right? Yeah.
Yep.
As a commander.
Woo. Yep. And then in that great Y-Wing bombing run, we get a shout out to Oddball. Yeah. Who is featured in a couple places. He pops up in the Clone Wars film as a pilot, and then he's in Revenge of the Sith as well. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the poor clone from Obi-Wan's group, from the 212th, who dies, is Waxer, who we met as the team of Waxer and Boyle befriending Numa on Ryloth.
Absolutely.
Very, very sad. So, yeah, just wanted to run down those connections. Any other specific connections that you wanted to comment on?
I love the moment, if you're talking about just general canon connections, when Fives is talking about his old buddy, little Anakin, blowing up the Trade Federation ship. It's
yes.
Great. And it's yes. Great to, again, talk about justice for the prequels, or, kind of legitimizing the Phantom Menace as a story, right? Of just like, that's history. That's what happened. That's 10 years ago. And we're going to have some similar shots that we're going to see of them flying into the Trade Federation, or the supply ship, I should say, reminiscent of the Trade Federation ship with Anakin. I just love that little moment. It's very lived in history, lived in universe. And it was a, dare I say, sweet moment in the darkness.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. The actual line is, General Skywalker blew up a droid control ship when he was just a kid, and he told me the trick was hitting their main reactor from the inside.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's so great because it gives them, like, gives them in the audience of, like, okay, that's the plan. That's what they're going to do. That's how it's going to work. You know, there's the funny joke of, like, oh, really? Great. That easy. But it also paints this picture that's so important to this arc of, you know, there's that line at one point too of like, you know, yeah, but General Skywalker is always, you know, up in front leading us, not taking up the rear like Pon Krell. This is one of those lines that reinforces like Anakin and the clones are friends as well as just military structure. And you can get this picture of like, well, when did he tell Fives, you know, what hellscape were they, you know, trapped in, or had they just won and they were, you know, sitting around and having a chat? Like just that there's that level of like friendship and connection that's implied by, you know, Fives in awe of his Jedi general and going, you did what when you were how old?
Oh, total campfire conversation, sitting around having a can of space beans talking about it. I love it.
Yeah, a great moment of space beans. Last thing for canon lore connections, there were a couple of familiar lines.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Hard K says, I prefer a good fight to all this sneaking around. Fives is totally BSing Krell over comms, and Krell says, who is this? What's your CT number? And then, of course, Krell, in a moment of absolute Star Wars villainy poetry, says, it's treason then.
Yes. I loved all of them, and some of them were homages versus quotes, but that just, like, I love that that's in the Sith or Sith-adjacent playbook.
Yeah, it's just so great of like, well, yes, I have totally subverted the system that you are honoring and, in fact, used your honor for it to hurt you. But it's you who are disrespecting me by calling me on it.
It's treason then.
Yeah. And I did like it's you know, on the nose, but it's like, who is this? What's your CT number?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I prefer this. Prefer the fighting to all this run around. It's always fun.
Yeah, and it fits Hardcase character, so fair enough. Was there anything in this big epic arc that you disliked or questioned?
I mean, no. I think I just overall just love these arcs so much because of the deep thoughts attached to them and how these episodes can reward you with some powerful questions. So I think it was generally handled really well. And four, dare I say, beautiful in their own way episodes, but four important episodes, so I'm good with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I did want to ask you this, because I think I ultimately come down on being fine with it. This is a longer arc. It's four episodes, and so there's that part of me that goes, well, could it have been three? Because we do get these moments where Krell is, you know, giving them kind of the same command of just, like, without recon or doing anything else clever, just march into the Maw of War. And I think I went into this going, I wonder if that's going to be a critique I have. But I think the repetition actually does make me feel it more. And it makes me feel the horror of war more. And it makes me feel how much Rex and the rest of the clones are really trying to do what their leader says.
Yeah, it's a fair note. And it's a fair note definitely for some of the other arcs. I know we talked about that some stuff in season 7, right? But I think you're right, because it instead of growing frustrated with just the pace of the story, you kind of continue to grow frustrated with Krell and the whole system. Or I had a couple thoughts of, isn't Kenobi, tell Kenobi, like, why are we not talking to anyone else? So I think it's effective in that way.
Yeah, and I do like that the comms go out right around the time that Rex would have been maybe like, maybe going to bring this up to Kenobi. Yeah. I'm going to sneak one more thing that I liked in this section where I ask if there's anything we disliked. Yeah. The four episodes also made it. So we had two pretty close to actual cliffhangers, right? That first episode, we leave them on the road being shot at. And the last line is, I don't know, I'll get back to you if we survive this battle.
Right.
And then the third episode is the Krell saying, for crossing me, you will pay the price. And it's not really, you know, we still have the zoom out and the credits. It's not the dun, 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 or, you know, come back next week. But in spirit, they're cliffhangers. And I love that.
That worked. It worked real. I watched the first time, you know, I watched it all in one order, and it just felt like a little movie. And I know, you know, season 7 gets a lot of credit for putting these little kind of movies out, or I think the last four episodes were intentionally kind of framed like that. But this was really effective. Yeah. And I love those, especially the first one. I hadn't seen these episodes in a couple of years, and I just almost had a chuckle at like, oh yeah, they're just pulling you forward with the story.
Yeah, absolutely. So is there anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
I just think I would be remiss not to mention one of my favorite things of all time, of course, is Robotech. And there's a direct Robotech influenced design that also has a little bit to do with Dune. If you look into the notes there, that's the Umbarans kind of outfits, their pressure suits and stuff. They're wearing a little bit of a Zentradi design from Robotech, the enemies at the start of the story in the first series. And then even those flying crabs, I didn't write down the official name, but they're flying crabs. They're very Invid-like, which is the main enemy from the third series of Robotech. And that's just because, well, the Invid essentially were designed like crabs. So crabs exist in our world. So everything looks like a crab is influenced by a crab. But it reminded me of the Invid flying around, taking on the next generation character. So always tipping the cap to Robotech, I am.
Look, I would be... This is so delightful. I really love hearing about fandoms that I don't know about. So I would be happy to add a section to the Clone Wars report of, did anything remind you of Robotech?
did Filoni and his team work at Robotech? Because I think Dave was a fan. So
Yeah. For me, just the only other thing I wanted to shout out is another Dave. Dave Fennoy voiced Pong Krell. And man, obviously this is a huge triumph of an arc for D. Bradley Baker. Playing all those clones, but the Pong Krell's voice gives him such power and such a great performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree with that one.
All right. If you could have a figure or toy inspired by this arc, who or what do you want?
Man, is there a Krell? I
don't know. No, when you Google Pong Krell, the only thing that comes up is custom action figures.
See, there you go. I think we do need, we do sometimes like to collect our baddies. We do need a Krell with, double swing and lightsaber action. But if we don't want to pay too much respect to Krell, I do think we could get a battery operated caterpillar tank. Just stomps around your house, chasing your dog around.
Yeah. Can I get a Roomba that looks like that tank? That's what I want.
Just makes a sound. Ka-junk, 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 ka-junk.
Yeah. So, I desperately want a vintage 3¾ or probably a little taller Pong Krell action figure. It's so great and torturous that the Clone Wars starts out with, like, we're going to make a figure for every little thing. And then that drops off a little bit.
Yeah.
The image of Pong Krell with those lightsabers being spun around by the Vixis, I don't know. I think that would make a good ornament.
Oh, yeah.
To hang from the tree. It's the Vixis spinning Pong Krell. It's got a little motor. You can spin around.
Okay.
I like just that. In time for the holidays. Any other toys?
No. I'd take an Umbaran and the Starfighters there.
Oh, yeah.
I'd take that design, little toy.
Yeah, there. Absolutely. Well, when, you know, the Acolyte is set on Umbara, because who knows?
You heard it here first.
Yes, wild conjecture, not based on anything, just a thing I said out loud. No YouTube videos, please. All right, next up is season 4 continues, of course, and we're going into, you know, a much lighter episode about the Zygarian slavers. This is episodes 11, 12, and 13, another pretty brutal arc, so I'm excited to get into that with you, Ken. Yes. As always, we like to close out with the moral of this episode of our podcast.
A great podcaster edits from the front and records from the back. What? No, that just makes sense.
Yeah, that sounds like some weird, like, liquor in the front, poker in the back kind of a sign at
at a bar.
In an establishment, yeah.
In Corona, California. I've been there. There you go.
Edit in the front, record in the back. There's going to be the t-shirt that we won't ever post on our t-shirt shop there. Speaking of which, Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
I would love to. We're the Force Center Podcast. We'll be found on Twitter, Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. You can like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. Get a audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center Merch. It's available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And then don't forget, podcasts available a lot of different spots. Hey, try a Spotify or Amazon Music. If you're tired of some of the old standards that are frustrating you, we're there as well. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. Force Center. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com. Do have upcoming comedy dates at the Comedy Loft in Washington, D.C., December 16th through the 19th. Be featuring for Mark Ellis. Go to Mark Ellis Live. Well, he had to change his website. It got hacked. So just go to kennapsok.com and there's links to tickets there.
Websites are hard these days. Anyway, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website. If it has not been hacked, I should check on it. JosephScrimshaw.com for all of my other comedy adventures, links to my other podcast, Obsessed, shows I've written on, comedy albums, all kinds of stuff like that. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Rex and his code, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.